Business Matters, in association with Donegal ETBs for their education and training service, providing training to suit your business daytime or evening, in class or online, in training centres or on-site.
Hi, I'm Kieran O'Donnell. You're welcome to Business Matters. Later in the programme, I'll be catching up with Emmett Rush, owner of Rush Fitness in Letterkenny. But first, Claire Ryan set up ITOS Secure Technologies in 2018. She works specifically with small and medium-sized businesses to protect them from cyber attacks. She also helps educate businesses on cyber threats, which rose significantly during the pandemic. Claire explained that there are two strands to her company, which is based in Letterkenny.
We provide what we call managed security services, particularly to small and medium businesses. So in a nutshell, we'll go in and we'll look at how that business operates, and we'll put everything in place from the software to the IT products that you would need to secure your business, so to prevent a cyber attack from happening, and work with your staff in terms of the policies and procedures and training on how to identify where the threats are coming from to make sure that you have the smallest possible chance of something going horribly wrong as possible.
And that has happened on occasions?
It has done. It happens more than people realise. At least on a weekly basis, we will step in to support someone, whether it's somebody who's brand new, never worked with us before, or somebody who's already on our customer base, who's had an incident and needs advice and guidance on it.
So, Claire, you work specifically with small and medium-sized businesses to protect them, essentially, from cyber attacks, and I suppose to educate them on cyber attacks. Can you talk and we talk about in depth about a cyber attack, what it is exactly?
So a cyber attack or a cyber incident is when you lose a piece of business information, okay, whether that's belonging to your customer or whether that's something very sensitive to how your business operates, a tender agreement, etc., and it gets put out into the wider open atmosphere for people to obtain. That can either be because someone has tried to. It can be because a member of staff accidentally released the information. So you've sent the wrong email to the wrong Kieran. Okay, you've attached the wrong document. Could be even that you've posted the letter out to the wrong address. Okay, or it could be the case that you have had an employee whose time maybe is finishing with your organisation, whether you know or they know, and they've taken a malicious act against your organisation and damaged your organisation as a result.
Is that a common occurrence, Claire?
That's more common than people would think. And it's a key element when we talk to businesses. When you go on to talk to businesses, everyone says, my staff are fantastic. I never would have any issues with my staff until the day and hour it happens to your organisation. Maybe you've decided to end a contract. Maybe the relationship has soured with a key employee. And suddenly you realise that that member of staff owns and holds all of the passwords for your system, have access to information that you didn't realise they've had. And then they're looking to cause you some personal damage or some reputational damage to your business.
Is it safe to say that cyber is part of the IT overall working?
It is and it isn't, Kieran. Okay, so cybersecurity should be at the heart of everything that you do in your business. Okay, the same way that you wouldn't walk out the front door and leave the front door unlocked or leave cash in the till overnight. You should always be thinking about trying to protect your business. But it's not something that's just done by an IT company. So everyone will have an IT company that they work with, and it's wrong for a business owner to assume that they have full responsibility for cybersecurity, because that's not often what's included in the package. It's not what you're paying for. It's an additional service and it's an additional skill set that not everybody has.
Is that something that businesses might not be overly aware of?
Absolutely. If you talk to a business, they'll say, oh yeah, we have everything in place. And when you start to delve on it, they'll say, well, I've got antivirus. And that's the end of the conversation. And that's not a cyber strategy. It's a good start, but it's not a strategy. And I've seen, unfortunately for businesses, things go horribly, horribly wrong. And then they try to work out who's responsible and who's going to pay for the damage. And they'll look to their IT company, and the IT company will quite rightly say, that's not been my responsibility. It wasn't in our contractual agreement, and you weren't paying for that service.
So what are the biggest challenges facing small businesses at the minute, and is geography a factor in the challenges that they're facing?
So it doesn't make any difference whether you're based here in Letterkenny or in Buncrana or in Dublin. Okay. You're not any less likely to have a cyber attack simply because you're located in Malin Head and nobody maybe knows about you. We're all accessing the web. We're all trying to trade internationally. We want to do business wherever we can, and that means you're a potential target. So the threats and vulnerabilities are not any different. Doesn't matter if you're a sole trader or someone with two or three employees, or you're a large organization with 100 employees. The threats will still be the same. The challenges really for small businesses in particular are allowing budget specifically for your cybersecurity. So it's not the budget that buys a new computer or adds a new email address on or updates your printer. It's a separate type of budget that you have to have in there. And secondly is appreciating that staff need to be trained on it. You can't expect your staff to be fully aware of all the different challenges that are out there and how to deal with them if you don't invest a little bit of training on that.
Can cybersecurity be expensive?
The perception is that it is an expensive add-on. And unlike maybe optimising your website or printing out new flyers, people find it very difficult to see a return of investment, particularly for small businesses. But the reality is it doesn't have to be expensive. And I always tell people, if you're spending more on takeaway coffees in the week than you are on your cybersecurity, there's something very, very wrong. So you might be spending €2 or €3 per day, okay, so €15 a week on coffees, and you don't see necessarily any reward on that. And that would give you a sizable security budget for a small business to actually play on. And the reality is, if something goes wrong, the damage to your reputation and the damage in terms of the costs involved in repairing the damage will far outstrip anything that is required to put good security in place to begin with.
Claire, you gave a presentation earlier in the week at the Lunch and Learn session organised by Local Business Networks in Letterkenny and Donegal on cybersecurity and email and regarding the advice for small businesses. Informative but scary was, I think, how Michael McGinty described it in his closing remarks. I thought it was very apt and I thought it was very informative myself. What was your takeaway from the presentation you gave, and have you had much reaction to that since?
So we've had brilliant feedback. To be honest, I was floored that we had so many attendees. Security is almost like a dirty word. Sometimes people don't like to admit they don't know as much as what they should.
Why is that, Claire?
I think it comes back to that perception, like I said at the training session. Sometimes when you get a scam email in, the first response that you have is, oh my God, we've been compromised. And that's actually not what has happened. Someone you have been dealing with has been compromised, and that's how they've got your information.
And there's a distinct difference.
There is a complete difference between that. And people tend to think, like, well, if I don't tell anybody, then nobody will know. And that's where the problems occur, this idea of sticking your head in the sand and hiding things in the drawer and not letting people know what's happening means that other people are more likely to fall for these incidents as a result of it. We definitely had good response out of it. I like to say to people who tell me they could spot these emails a mile away, that isn't the case. And every now and again, I'll have to look two or three times before I decide if something's genuine or not.
One of the things that struck me during the presentation was 90% of cybersecurity incidents begin on email. Can you elaborate a wee bit on that?
Yeah. So everybody will tend to think that what you've got is a team of teenagers in hoodies who are sitting in their bedroom trying to randomly identify where your computer is and then hack into your computer. It's not the case. People now really play on the human side of employees, reaching out to you as an individual, getting you when you're maybe a little bit tired at the end of the day or almost switched off knowing it's the weekend and you can't wait to get out of work because there's other things, or the weather's lovely and let's wrap up early and let's get out. And they'll play on that. And it's much easier for them to tease you and get you to give them the information than for them to invest significant time and energy trying to determine what your password would be. So I'll just play with you, Kieran, you give me your password. Big tick for me, I'm in and I've made profit at the other end of it.
Can you talk to me, Claire, about the extremes these people go to get information, to get passwords and to try and hoodwink people?
Yeah, don't be underestimated by this in any shape, form or fashion. So these organisations, these organised crime groups will have teams of people, graphic designers. They'll have the most elite people in terms of their IT backgrounds. They'll have a marketing team who are out there who are monitoring different information that are coming in. They'll look for different pulse points and they'll try to play on those to generate the quality of the emails that were going out. And I know that anyone who was on the session had seen some of the quality of the emails that have been generated as fraudulent emails.
Can you give some examples of those?
So some of the ones that I had shown were Facebook. So quite a lot of people will have Facebook accounts or all their social media accounts. But Facebook is always one I always play on with small businesses, because many people will have a small Facebook page for their business as well. And as you know, they're tailored off your own personal Facebook page. And what will happen is you'll get maybe an email coming through saying that you've logged in somewhere else in the world. So you could be sitting at home here in Letterkenny on a Saturday night, and suddenly this email pops into your phone to tell you that you've logged into your Facebook account in New York, and you think, well, I haven't, I'm sitting here. And it could be after a glass of wine, or it could be after a long day. And suddenly you click on that email to confirm that you did not log in, because you're going to be efficient here and you're going to tell them that wasn't me, close that down. But when you click on it, it'll prompt you to put in your username and password to confirm that it's definitely you. And once you do that, they've access to your account. And then they lock you out, which means you've also been locked out of your business account at the same time. So you've not only lost your own personal Facebook account, but you've lost your business one. And for many small businesses and micro businesses, their whole business is run on Facebook through their ads, through their communication with their customers, etc. And that could be critical.
What advice then are you going to give someone, either the owner of a business or an employee, when they come on an email that they think isn't just right?
So no one will get annoyed with you for not responding to an email. We all have this element in our own psyche where you think you have to respond quickly and efficiently, or someone will be annoyed and not do business with you. If it's a genuine email and you haven't responded to it, they'll send you a follow-up email or they'll ring you. So if you're in any way in doubt, if it doesn't look right, you're not expecting it, something's just slightly off with it, they don't normally communicate in that way, then don't open the email and don't click on anything. And if somebody's asking you for a payment and putting you under pressure for a payment, pick up the phone. Just pick up the phone and check, did you definitely send me that? Can I definitely check these are your bank details? Even people you deal with regularly. And sometimes that's where people get caught. Somebody that they know for 20 years maybe and have done business with them regularly send something through. So of course it would be from them. It wouldn't be from anybody else. After 15 years they've decided to change their bank account, because that would be the norm.
Has the pandemic impacted on cybersecurity?
Massively. So cyber has increased, the number of reported cyber attacks has increased by over 600% since last March. Okay. Anyone who has a cyber insurance premium will know this, because the premiums have gone up by more than 30%. And the challenge here is, first of all, COVID really gave a great opportunity to put out information for the scammers. So there was loads of things there about vaccinations, about the latest update, etc. But the other side of that is the work environment has changed.
Remote working was a factor, I'm sure.
Remote working is a significant factor. So your work colleague who sat beside you that you would have said, did you get this email, is no longer there. The person who looks after the IT in the office, whether it's their job or they do it as an extra, isn't there. You haven't got that safeguard of the office. You're sitting at home on a device that's maybe not as protected as what it should be. You've got the kids squealing in the background. You're trying to get the dinner on. You need to hang out the washing and you're distracted. And as a result, you're clicking on things more than you normally would.
And the phone, you mentioned at the last presentation as well, is another, possibly a bigger danger in terms of maybe others getting your information from your phone.
Absolutely. People tend to forget about how powerful your mobile phone is. I go into offices sometimes and the laptop or the computer could be 6, 8, 9 years old and it's functioning and it's grand, but they've a brand new iPhone sitting in their pocket and they wouldn't dream of having one that was 2 or 3 versions ago. So it's incredibly powerful. You've all of the information, your banking apps, your emails, personal photographs, all of the communication, the amount of information going back and forward by WhatsApp, all contained in that mobile phone. And we're click happy. We like to scan things while you're waiting in the queue, you're waiting on someone coming out of Tesco's, you'll kill 20 minutes, you'll respond to your email at 7 o'clock at night or 10 o'clock before you're going to bed. I'll just check and see what's going on. Click, click, click. And before you know it, the damage is done, because things look different on a phone compared to the PC.
How long have you been working in the cyber security sector yourself, Claire?
So I've been involved in information management for almost 15 years. So worked both in Queen's University and Ulster University, kind of dealing with sensitive information and how we protect that. And then we've branched out, I suppose I've been working on this about 3 years, did a Master's in Governance and Data Protection here at LYAIT, gave me a really good, strong foundation on the regulation side of things. But in those 3 years, that evidence has been built up by first-hand experience. And as I said, working particularly with those small and medium businesses, because it's different in a small business than it is in a large enterprise.
And what impact did COVID have on your business?
We've been incredibly busy. So last March, the initial shift was get everybody working from home and get them working from home securely.
Was that a challenge?
It was. It was an incredible challenge. I suppose people maybe are not so clued into the fact that supply lines had been impacted in China. So getting laptops wasn't an option. So therefore, you were relying on less secure options, allowing someone to use a laptop that the kids also use for their homework and was connected to YouTube and different gaming ones just to make sure that work was able to flow. And then I suppose from September as well, we've spent a lot of time now going back and reviewing with organisations who are planning on keeping this hybrid approach to working and making sure that everything is as secure as possible. So the sticky plaster solutions that happened last March aren't appropriate any longer for a long-term secure working environment, and we've started to correct that. Yeah.
And what approach has your own company taken in that regard?
So we have always been quite used to working remotely. So we service customers from as far away as Cork and Dublin, as well as local customers. So we have very good systems in place. But even in our own respect, when staff come in, our staff are always brought back into the office, and we go through a very strong induction process with them. Because when you have access to other people's information, I need to be sure that you're above board and honest and the right person to work with me before I will allow you to access other people's information. Not always something that's done in IT companies, Kieran, and I'll be honest about it. We have significant safeguards then in place too in terms of how people access our own systems.
Is that something you feel that security companies should be more mindful of?
I think it's something that all businesses should be more mindful of. Just because someone works with an IT company doesn't mean they might not inadvertently cause damage to your business, and it's you that pays the price. And sometimes an IT company staff move around quite a bit, and they'll take passwords with them. They're not always changed afterwards, or worse still, I find some businesses don't know any passwords to their systems. The IT company knows it all, and then they fall out. And then all of a sudden, there's no friendship and there's no exchange of information. And businesses will have their emails go down, their websites go down, they have access to no data. And that's just because they hadn't got good controls in place as the business owner.
What's the biggest lesson you've learned so far in business?
For me, it really is about educating business owners. And I do say that because my job here is not to come in and take over everything. My job is to make sure that you know everything that you can possibly know to help your business grow and move forward, even if you part ways with me down the line. My interest is in helping you as a business owner.
And what advice would you give your 21-year-old self, Claire?
God, that's an interesting question. I suppose looking back at those times, so I had a different background. I was originally a scientist and had gone down that route and did science outreach before coming into this particular area. But if I was 21 and going back, I would say get loads of work experience. I see it with my own children. They don't think they need work experience and they don't want to ask. Companies are always willing to give you a little bit of an insight to help shape your career path. And if it was me, I would say get into technology early.
Do you enjoy your job?
Love it. Absolutely love it. Even in my previous roles when I was in the science head, it was always about empowering people who had other challenges in life, who wanted to succeed and just weren't given the opportunity. And I see what we do the same, helping businesses to get over those hurdles, help them grow and survive.
So your previous career was a very good fit for what you're doing now?
I do think so, yeah. Very, very different. I used to set fire to money, for example, and blow up eggs and things like that. So it was very, very different. But I would say the stakeholders were the same, communicating across complex messages and helping them to understand it with that mindset of changing their mind and opening their mind to the possibilities of where you can go.
And the challenge of being your own boss and having your own business brings added complications and challenges too?
It does, it does. For me personally, I always think switching off.
Do you find that hard?
Awfully hard. Do a lot of things in the evening. Weekends are not a weekend. You're always constantly thinking about business. Even, you know, can you go on a family holiday? There's one. The laptop comes everywhere that I go because you just don't know when you need to jump on to support somebody. Because somebody's in crisis, they need the support. You can't turn around and say, well, you know, it's a Friday night here, bring me back on Monday morning. That's not who we are. It's not what we do.
And finally, Claire, what does the future hold for yourself and your business?
So yeah, the other side of our business is a software development side. So we are developing a piece of software to help small businesses manage their security without the need of an IT person. And for us, what we're hoping to do is raise some money. So in the next couple of weeks, we're going to come out now and let everybody know that we're opening a seed round, and that will help us commercialise that product. So we were Zurich's innovation champion, actually, last year, and we have some work to do with them. And we've been talking with a lot of large-scale insurance companies who provide cyber insurance. And our aim is to secure that funding, add to our team significantly, and build out an international company from Letterkenny.
That was Claire Ryan, co-founder and CEO of ITIS Secure Technologies, based at the CoLab in Letterkenny. Still to come, we'll be chatting to local gym owner Emmett Rush.
Would your engineering company like to increase its capabilities and turnaround time for clients? Donegal ETB, in partnership with Leo Donegal, can provide you with SolidWorks training to help you do so. Contact Enterprise Engagement at donegaletb.ie or call 074-912-0500.
You're welcome back. Emmett Rush was a carpenter for 14 years before switching career paths in 2011. 7 years ago, he left a full-time job at the Ara Leisure Centre to set up his own business. Emmett recalled how he felt earlier this month when he pulled up the shutters at his gym in Letterkenny for the first time in 2021.
It was actually nerve-wracking, the opening for the first time. It's probably as stressful a month I put in whenever we were told we could reopen as it was when I first opened the gym, because you were coming back to a lot of uncertainty. Obviously, we had our set number of members that had stayed with us online while we were closed, but you're trying to reactivate members who were paused and then try and bring in new members. And basing it off last July when we came back, there was a lot of uncertainty coming back from last July where people just didn't feel comfortable coming back in. But thankfully, this time around, I think everybody's just had their fill of sitting at home, and everybody was ready to get back doing something again. So it was fantastic. It was nerve-wracking up until we got it, but once we get in, got the first session done at 6 a.m, you're just back to normal.
So we're Friday, you've just finished another class. What has the first couple of weeks been like, being back?
It's been brilliant. You were worried about a lot of things, obviously, because we were at home. You weren't having to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, because we were streaming things usually around 10 a.m. for the members, and then we have software that we can restream it then at 6 p.m. in the evening time, and it streams out live on Facebook for them. But I was worried about being tired and things, I guess, here, but it hasn't come at all. Like, it's just I think the energy and the buzz you're getting from the members being back, and they're all glad to be back in with people again, so it's just the buzz is just keeping you going. That's brilliant, just been back at it.
What is the mindset like now among your members, having talked to them over the last couple of weeks?
Completely different from last year. So it is, like I say, last year we had members who had vulnerable family members, we had members who might have had small issues themselves, and they just weren't comfortable being in. They might have come to a class that wasn't overly busy. Like, we have classes throughout the day. We put on extra because of COVID so that we could reduce numbers in each class, and some of the newer ones we put on just because they weren't being used a lot and they never had been before. They might only had 5 or 6 people in it, and for the members who weren't comfortable in bigger groups, they were happy to go to those. But now, this time, and I mean, our classes usually, if it was a 6 a.m. class, by the time people filtered in, you got started being 6:05, whereas now they're on the door 6:10. Like, whenever we're pulling into the car park at 6:15, half of them are already sitting there waiting to come in the door, and that's the same with every class throughout the day. They're all there waiting to come in, and they're all eager to get in and get started. Just
can you explain a typical day in the life of the gym and your own life?
Yeah, we started, I would get up at 5, get ready, and here we come in here about usually 6:15, doors go up at 6, and then we'll run a class at 6 for the people, we'll run a class at 7, we'll either have PT or I'll film one of the classes at 8 that'll be streamed live then at 10, and then we're back in for 9 and 10pm, and then, or 10am, and then if we don't have PT clients, we'll do a staff meeting usually on a Monday around midday. And then we start back again at 4, and that runs us right through to 8 o'clock.
How many is in your team here at the minute, Emmett?
There's 2 of us, and then Maria also is trained in fitness as well. So during the summer, Maria will pull us out, and then we'll be bringing in. If things keep going the way they're going, we'll have to bring someone else in.
You mentioned the online system and keeping in touch with your members that way. Mm. Can you explain a wee bit more detail how that worked and what you had to do to roll that out?
Yes. I was been online since 2017, so I've always been doing bits and pieces online and doing things, and we've always had a group that we've been training online. But when COVID hit, I was in the middle of building an app, which is my online brand is HabiFit. So we had that almost finished, but it was going to be very much for training people in gyms and things like that. It was never meant to be live streaming where you were doing the classes Joe Wick style in front of everybody. So whenever COVID hit, we were doing Facebook Live, and we just needed a better way to stream it out to people so we could reach more people at the one time. So I went and sourced software, and then the Leo at the time was doing out the grants for moving people online, and that's what I used that for. I used it for upgrading the software that I was previously using and for getting new software in, and then my tech guy Ian Spence that does all the websites and all for me, we built the membership site in the back end of the website. So whenever we were streaming, we streamed live at 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. to the members within the Facebook group, but then that also went into the back end of the website, so if they weren't able to get it then, they were able to log into the back end of the website. And we have, since I think it was April 23rd last year, we have workouts 6 days a week that are in the back end of that website now. So there's almost, I suppose, 250 workouts built into the back end of that.
And is this going to be the way for the future, and how you're going to roll out your service?
So the app that is built now, it's finished, it's sort of unlimited for what I can do with it. Like I say, it would have been like a structured program that any GA guy or anything would use, and we can build out whatever program people's needs. And then that program will go to them. They're able to log everything on it, and we can check in with them and do weekly check-ins. But it's also able to take up to 1 gigabyte of video. So what we're doing now online, where we're streaming it live and we're doing it like that, eventually that will be built into the app, and that's how it'll work then. So they'll have everything within that app on their hand.
So do you feel you have a better way of going now, 16 months after the pandemic?
I suppose what we had planned to do whenever we were planning to have online and build that up was spearheaded, and it was just pushed out quicker. So it was. So we still have 50 people online that are from around the country, and we have 2 international people that came on with us. So it's building that now. It's the type of thing that you're going to build organically based on the members that are currently there and helping getting reviews and keeping them happy. It's nothing I'm going to pump money into yet until I get it built up a wee bit more. I think organically you can build online without having to go down the route of paid advertising yet, based on experiences of other members, because a lot of the members that are coming to us, we're not advertising at the minute, but we're still bringing in 1 to 2 members a week onto that online crew. So it's just based on other people talking about it and sharing their things and their stories on Instagram and things like that, and other people seeing it. Because there's always people that need to train at home. Everybody had to train at home during the pandemic, but there's always people that can't get to the gym. There's always parents that can't get to the gym. So there's always people at home that need to train from home, and we'll be there to cater for that as well.
During lockdown, Emmett, you weren't shy in voicing your opinion in relation to maybe when gyms should have opened, and why do you feel gyms should have opened earlier than June the 7th?
They were releasing their weekly epidemiology reports, and whenever you looked at it, gyms fell under all sports and fitness. And out of that, up until I think we were closed down fully at the end of the year, but the last full report that came out would have been around the start of December. And even on that there, out of the entire year, I think there were 7 cases linked back to the entire sports and fitness. So that's not just gyms, that's all sports, outdoor sports, all fitness activities and recreational sports. So there's 7 out of all that, like, and there's 500,000 active gym users in Ireland. If there had been cases linked back to gyms that had caused clusters, you would have heard about it straight away, but you didn't. And a lot of the fear that they had for gyms was coming off 2 different things. One of them was back at the very start of the pandemic out in Singapore, there was one link back to a Zumba class. This is the way it was advertised in the media. And it wasn't a Zumba class. It was a Zumba training for trainers. So they were in the room training with each other for 8 hours. So one of them had COVID, the rest of them got COVID, but they were 8 hours in the room with each other. And another one was in Toronto, and that came from a spin class. And there was no ventilation in the spin studio that they were in. So one person went in, they were in the spin class. It was enclosed spin studio with glass. There was no ventilation, so which meant that they were literally in a sweat box. So it was the perfect environment for it. But that's not how all gyms are. So it is, if your gym's spaced out, like we reduced down from 24 in a room down to 16 in a room, we have adequate ventilation. We've got a floor-to-ceiling roller door. So if you're able to match everything to do with the guidelines, and everything's sanitized, everything's clean, we brought in the foggers, then there's no reason that we couldn't have opened, especially in other industries who had worse sort of markings on the epidemiology report, were getting open before us.
How do you think the government have handled the pandemic overall as a businessman?
It's hard to criticise whenever you're talking about people who have lost people. You know what I mean? It's easy for us to turn around and say that it's affected business and all this, which it has for any small business. And you've businesses that still aren't even on the cards for opening yet. Do you think the likes of nightclubs and then some of the smaller pubs? Like, there's still no real talk of them. So them businesses are sorely affected by it. I think they're still overly cautious when it comes to things. And that's good in a way for what it is, but it's bad in a way that if an industry can open safely, there's no reason it shouldn't be open. You know what I mean? The likes of the rapid antigen tests and all, they still aren't sold in that, and every other country in Europe is using it. So the schools in the UK have been doing it twice a week since October last year for their teachers, where they do it themselves and give the results to the teacher, and there has been no real increases there with it. So there's ways to do things where you can actually keep it right, and I think Ireland's going to lose out to other countries, especially in regards to tourism and things like this, if they don't stop sitting on their hands with it. In regards to business, it's decimated business. So it has some small businesses, the debt that they're bound to be in just to keep themselves afloat has to be huge, and the government needs to step up for them.
Tell me, Matt, what did you miss most during the last lockdown?
People. So it is. I would be very much an introvert by nature. Even though I work with people all day, for me, I'm quite happy to go to the cinema and watch a movie on my own or sit at home. I like movies and things like that, and I'm quite happy in my own company. But I deal with people all day, and you go with dealing with maybe a couple of hundred people a day, 6 days a week. And to last year wasn't too bad because the girls were being homeschooled and Maria was working from home. So what Maria had to teach from home. So when I did the classes and streamed everything, I homeschooled the girls. But then from October last year, they went back to school. So from October last year until till we reopened, once I had the stuff done in the morning for the class and that streamed, I was sitting on my toilet at home. So it was, and it was too long. So it was, so yeah, getting back around people and actually having the crack with people and seeing people coming through the door and just the banter, and you don't realise how much you miss it until you're back in it again.
Tell me, are you adopting a softly, softly approach as they bed in and get back into the groove slowly again?
I have to. Like, even the people who were training with us online, you push yourself as much as you can online at home, but that's never the same as what you do when you come into the gym. Like, we have MyZone in the gym, which is the heart rate tracking system, so I'm able to see what they were doing at home in regards to their workouts, the people that have the belts, and they might have got maybe, say, between 70 and 100, it's MEPS it's called, so it's their sort of, they get points for exercising, basically, whereas in the gym, whenever they're in here in the group environment, that 70 to 100 would be 110 to 140. Based because you're just pushing harder. So when you bring them in the door, you have other people that haven't done nothing since we closed on December 22nd, and then we have members that haven't done anything since we closed in March 2020 because of the pandemic. So you couldn't come in and just go, let's go.
Yeah, but keeping people motivated is a big part of your job. Do you find there are times where it's difficult for yourself to stay fully motivated all the time?
Like, whenever you're doing what you're doing in the gym and you're pushing people and all this here, it's like a workout on yourself. It's draining. So at times, yeah, coming near maybe the end of the week and the last couple of sessions coming up to the end of the week, you'd find yourself drained because just it's been a long week and you've been pushing yourself and you're on your feet and you're moving all day. Like my step count has gone from at home during the pandemic of being maybe 6,000, maybe scraping 10 a day, up to 15,000 to 23,000 a day, just walking up and down a 12-meter track, working with people. So, yeah, it's, I suppose what we do is as much performance as it is anything else, where you can't come in. If you're coming in on a bad day and not on form, you're giving that to your members. And for me, if they're training with us maybe 3 times a week, that's 3 hours out of the week. That might be the only 3 hours they have to come in where they're not at home or they're not at work. So if they're coming in to you and you're in bad form or you're not giving them what they need in regards to trying to keep them going, keep them motivated, then you're not doing your job. So you have to put on that performance for them and keep them motivated. Like,
is that your biggest challenge in a day-to-day?
Sometimes tiredness would, I mean, everybody's human, so tiredness would get to you at times. At times there's long days, but no, when the music starts going and the crowd's in front of you, you just, you, it wakes you up, and there's always coffee.
Yeah, but 7 years ago, just last month, you left a full-time job and,
yeah,
and took a brave and bold step into becoming your own boss. Looking back on those 7 years now, what are your thoughts?
I suppose hindsight's always a great thing. There's things you probably would have done differently in that I probably would have brought on staff quicker. You know what I mean? When you're going from working for people and you start working for yourself and you've never worked for yourself before, there's a big trust thing with doing what you're doing. And I have a certain way that I like my members to be looked after and the way that I like to coach them and things like that. And I suppose when you're only starting out, you think to yourself that no one else is going to do it the way you do it. So it probably held me back from bringing on staff quicker, and that there would help me expand in the business and things like that. But, I mean, I can't complain about the way the business has gone, because we've grown every year, and now we've got an online segment that's grown for us as well. So, yeah, I'm happy with how things have gone. You know what I mean? Because, like I say, when I left Aura, when I was working for them, I literally left Aura with 3 PT clients, and that was it. And it was moving out. I was moving up to freelance with the lads at the time up in Optimal, and I knew myself that if I had have done a thing where you were still working part time for Aura and working up there part time, that safety net would have been too much for you to get comfortable and never leave probably fully. So I had to bite the bullet and say to myself, "I'm doing it. I'm doing it now."
Was it a scary moment?
It was, because we had literally just signed a mortgage for building the house, and Maria was pregnant as well. So
you're locking on your life.
We had a lot going on, so it was like, well, we'll just throw everything at the wall now and let's go. And it worked, so it did.
What's the main lesson you've taken over the last 7 years in business, Emmett?
That's probably hire staff quicker, so it is, and learn to trust other people if they're good at what they do, let them do what they do. So it is, and not try and manage everything and be too particular with everything.
Was that a problem for you in the past?
Oh, I'm lethal. Like, I'm very much OCD with things in here. Like, you walked in the door, I was over in the gym, because it has to be at a certain standard. So yeah, it's letting go. But I've hired a guy, well, linked in with guys in the UK now that run gyms and help manage gyms and all. And I'm doing mentorship with him based on that side of things, everything to do with staffing and running the business and things like that.
And tell me, was fitness always your gig and always your thing?
No, well, I started the gym when I was 16, so I'm training in gyms now 25 years. So but no, I was a carpenter for 14 years, so I'm a byproduct of the bust. So I started carpentry in 96, doing my apprenticeship, and we finished in 2010 in June. And then I was sat for, I think, about 6 months, maybe something like that, up until I got the ECDL course. I'd never used a computer before. I didn't know nothing about tech. So I did the ECDL to learn about computers, and the guy that was doing the course with us there said this one day, that if you're thinking of doing something after this, pick something you like. So I googled courses and fitness, and I came across the one in Dublin, and I travelled down there daily to do that, to get the course done.
What took you into carpentry?
Trades, just at the time.
And did you like it?
Oh, I loved carpentry. Again, just the sights and the banter.
Do you still dabble?
Me? Well, you're covered, you're surrounded by drills and stuff down here. I do whatever needs done in the gym. Like, I'll do it myself. So it is. It saves you having to wait for people, and if I have the time, I'll just batter away at it, and the equipment, I build the equipment myself when I buy it and things like that. So yeah, I enjoy things like that. So I don't mind it. It's nearly like therapeutic for me, that it's taking you away from the business and maybe not working on the computer and taking an hour to do something and here I still enjoy that.
You referenced your earlier years. What advice would you give 21-year-old Emmett Rush now?
I suppose go and look for... It's hard to look back in that, because everything that I've done has taken me up to now. You know what I mean? The path that I went through has taken me here. so it can't complain about it. So you don't know if the path you had taken back then would have still led you back to the same place. I was told there was no avenues for what I wanted to do back then. Whenever we were doing the careers day at school and all, and I had an interest in doing coaching and doing things like this here. And unless you were interested in sort of GA or doing that route of coaching, there was no, I was told basically there was no avenue. And yet there were sports science courses about that they never thought they'd mention. Maybe this would help you. So,
yeah, it's kind of ironic that you ended up going back to something that you always had very much a love and a passion for.
That was the two things that I was either going down the route of a trade and carpentry because I enjoyed that, or fitness. And I was told there's no route for fitness, so I went down the trade route.
Yeah, but I noticed your tagline is helping you get results you will keep.
Yes.
How important is that for you to honour?
Oh, hugely. So it is. I think there's too much out there for people, and people, a lot of the people, like our main sort of age category would be that sort of 30 to 40 year olds would be the main bulk of our age category. And for a lot of the people come through the door, they've done the diets and they've done things like that. And they're coming in with this expectation that, oh, I'm starting this here, but it probably won't work like the other stuff hasn't worked. So our route is very much going down the lines of, doesn't have to be restrictive. You don't have to kill yourself. If you're starting out, don't throw everything at the wall at once. Like, we've had a lot of the new members that have started in with us here now, and I've told them to spend the first month and just do the gym. Don't look near the diet. Don't look near anything like that, because it hasn't worked for them in the past.
Do people put themselves under pressure at times when they come to the gym for the first time, Emmett?
Yeah. There's different things that will happen. There's the fear of starting a gym because maybe they've had a bad experience in the past, or they just don't know. For a lot of people coming in, they're afraid that people will be looking at them, and they're afraid that they might be able to do something and people will be looking at them going, oh, they can't even do it. And they don't realise that when they're coming into the gym, everybody is in their own zone and they're just doing what they're doing. So if everybody's doing that workout and everybody's down doing a certain exercise, they're not looking at the person beside them. The only thing they're concentrating on is getting through that workout. So people will have that fear, and then, like I said, people have the thing in their head where they have to be doing everything, and they have to be following a strict diet, and they have to be training every day, and then they get 2 weeks in and they can't keep it up. I would rather someone started doing 2 or 3 days a week and just start with that. Don't worry about food, don't worry about anything. To spend the first month or 6 weeks, get yourself moving. Once you're comfortable that you can do that, then start adding in other things and build it up like a habit that you're going to keep, because habits and making it part of your life will last you longer, and you'll get better results that you'll keep out of it rather than going hell for leather for 3 or 4 weeks and then falling off the wagon for 6 months.
So consistency and patience.
Yeah, consistency and patience every time. All you have to do is look at New Year's resolutions. Everybody throws everything at the wall in January. They barely get to the end of January and they're back to doing what they were doing, and then they don't start again until maybe summertime. And then they fall off the wagon. That's them until maybe January.
Finally, Emmett, as we near the midway point of 2021, and hopefully we're going to better days, what does the future hold for yourself and Rush Fitness?
Just keep building and keep expanding and keep. We're very lucky that we're coming back here now, and we're in a very good position. So we have other things we want to roll out in here. There's new programs that we want to roll out in here. I have a new member of staff that started with us. All going well, we'll be looking for another member of staff. And then all going well, if things keep building the way they're building, we'll expand.
So onwards and upwards?
Onwards and upwards.
Emmett Rush, owner of Rush Fitness in Letterkenny, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today on Business Matters.
Thanks, Kieran.
Well, that's our lot for this edition of Business Matters. Thanks to my guests, Claire Ryan and Emmett Rush. Thanks to Kenneth Wilson on sound, and thanks to you for listening. If you'd like to get in touch with the programme, drop an email to businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Business Matters, in association with Donegal ETBs for their education and training service, providing training to suit your business daytime or evening, in class or online, in training centres or on-site.